You know, people say that we're not interesting and nobody wants to watch the Falcons. NBC said that the audience for the Chiefs-Falcons game on Sunday night was 25 million viewers. That's the most watched Week 3 Sunday Night Football game ever.
How about that? I mean, the NFL is printing money, and it's funny. I remember Chris Collinsworth went on, I think it was Dan Patrick's show last week, and said, yes, of course I was rooting for the Falcons to win against the Eagles, but I think the Monday night helped drive viewership for the Sunday night.
It did. It did. And this is what I'm saying. Like, I'm being tongue-in-cheek about it. Nobody wants to watch the Falcons. Oh, all those people want to see the Chiefs. Well, the Chiefs are a show. There's no doubt. And they're going for 3-0. But you got to play somebody. And if that person you're playing is not interesting, right, which we became very interesting after the Eagles game, to Mike's point, there were people who are casual fans, and this is where the NFL wins. We're going to watch. It's the dude who goes, oh, really? I saw them win last week. Let me see what's going on with that game tonight. Let me watch a little bit of that. And that's where you draw these big audiences. So I only say that to say for everybody who's like, man, it felt different. We were telling you guys that Sunday, and around the country it was. 25 million viewers, third most watched Week 3 Sunday Night Football game ever.
We were talking with Wes Durham earlier. We're going to replay that for guys later in their cars, about 6:20 or so. But we were talking about, like, the defense. I think we're not angry or upset about the defense, right, Carl?
No.
Right? We're liking the work they're doing. But the fact remains, we are one of the worst teams in the league in sacking the quarterback. And just real quick, I was looking at some of those numbers. You certainly want to get, we've got to get more sacks, right? We've got to get after it. As far as the passing defense, you know, the Falcons are certainly, they're not bad. We're in the top, you know, the top like third of the NFL. But the one thing remains, you still got to get the other teams off the field. And if we could even get some of those long field goals out of there and stop those drives with some sacks.
It's true.
We need only the Bucs, who we'll see in a week's time after the Saints have less sacks than us.
All right, real quick, I think we have an update here on what's going on with our Falcons. And I want to mention this before we talk about the Dogs, because the injury update is what we've been waiting on with Drew Dahlman specifically. Mm. So Drew Dahlman has been placed on IR. So that means he's going to miss at least 4 weeks.
Okay.
They signed Elijah Wilkinson to the 53-man roster. They also signed Matt Hennessy to the practice squad. So this is backup.
Bringing back Matt Hennessy.
Yes, and then backup, which means the Dahlman injury, Mike, is more severe. We knew that Sunday. Caleb McGarry is listed as day-to-day. My guess is he'll be ready and play Sunday. Drew Dahlman is out. So here's the thing, guys. Both teams are dealing with center issues. Their Pro Bowl center is also out, and he is on the IR with a growing injury, and he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks, Eric McCoy. So both teams, the Saints and the Falcons, without their starting centers.
So remember, Matt Hennessy was our center, had that injury back in 23 in training camp, and then he went on the IR, and of course they get the injury settlement. Then he was with the Eagles. He signed with them and then was released by the Eagles at the last round of cuts before Labor Day. So that's where he was out on the float, for those who remember Matt Hennessy.
All right. We wanted to know. So Dahlman's injury is going to keep him out at least 4 weeks.
So Ryan Neuzel will be the man.
He will.
Moving forward, left-handed snap to Kirk Cousins, and hopefully, you know, we build on it. We've been going round and round about, you know, what needs to happen. But we got to finish. I think that's all that's missing right now is the finish and the clutch. And we've got a bunch of drives that have not been sustained. So I think when that gets going, now guys are like, you've been pretty mellow today, you and I. Yeah, I'm not ready to hit the chicken switch. Now we lose to the Saints. And how do we – if we win this, we beat the Saints, we're 2-2, which I think most people had us going to the first 4 games.
Yeah, listen, we played well the other night. I know it was frustrating to lose. But, again, if you told me with under 2 minutes of play we got the ball and a chance to win – I feel pretty good about that. I didn't like the call to go for it. I didn't like the play call. But all of that's neither here nor there. We played well the other night. And that gives me hope and confidence moving forward. Let's talk some Dogs. All right, this is what they absolutely have to do on Saturday night in Tuscaloosa, taking on Alabama. They got to start fast. Now, you're laughing right now and going, Dukes and Bell, duh, that's stupid. Of course they have to start fast. No, you don't understand.
No, they haven't been.
They haven't started fast. It's one of the reasons why this offense has struggled. Carson Beck and company have not started fast, Mike. And so when you're talking about Alabama, from a statistical standpoint, one of the best offenses in the country and certainly in the SEC, Mike, third in scoring, averaging 50 points a game at 49. Fifth in rushing, almost 240 yards a game. You've got to start fast and get some points on the board, Mike. Move the ball, and that's something Kirby talked about. Quote, starting faster would be good. That's Kirby Smart. Let's hear it.
I wouldn't say that we've started fast. Everybody wants to start fast, but sometimes it's like that. And sometimes there's no rhyme and reason, and then sometimes there's things you do that you could do better, you could execute better. Sometimes they just beat you. And it's gone both ways, offensively and defensively. We've had drives defensively that you know, we gave up too much field position and too many consecutive third downs that we didn't get off the field that maybe just made our offense start backed up. But it hasn't been perfect. But we have shown resiliency, and that's a trait that I would probably trade outside of perfect. I would trade a lot of traits for resiliency.
I mean, you said it the other day. I mean, the only losses on the books are against Alabama. And last year in the SEC championship, you know, not having a better plan or at least better execution against Jalen Milroe was huge. Then later Milroe said, looks like the Dogs didn't sign up for four quarters. A lot of guys said that left a huge, you know, bad taste in their mouth. And that's, you know, certainly something that they'll never talk about this week, but you know it's in the back of their minds. But you got to do something about it. Meanwhile, Alabama coaches were all asked about Georgia and providing zero bulletin board material.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing but respect. Womack from South Alabama, who joined DeBoer's staff, saying that Carson Beck makes the right decisions, doesn't turn the ball over, takes care of the football, great accuracy, quick release. So all the things you'd expect to hear there. And then talking about the running attack and saying how great Georgia's running backs are and the physical nature of it. Yeah, we know that. So nothing surprising from the Alabama staff this week.
Yeah, and Mike, here's the thing. I can only focus on what has happened. You know, we can try to predict the future, and sometimes we do on this show. But what has happened, and this is why it's a concern, is in your 13-12 win over Kentucky, you only had 63 yards of offense at the half. That's what they had at the half.
Right.
You only had 32 yards on 5 of 11 passing. Those are things that have happened that give you reason to pause and say, okay, we can't have that against Alabama. You do that against Alabama in the first half, it's a problem. Especially what I'm telling you about with their offense. Fifth in touchdowns scored in the country. So that is why we're talking about this. You know, they had, a 6-0 lead against Clemson, which ultimately they blew doors in the second half.
But it was a slow starting Clemson.
Clemson,
you know, with the physicality they brought, what you expected on defense, if Clemson hadn't shot themselves in the foot with continuous penalties, false starts, holding, their team just went backwards offensively. But, you know, Georgia did execute. Milroe, by the way, has got less yards passing. Both guys are perfect with touchdowns, 8 touchdowns and no interceptions for Jalen Milroe, and Carson Beck with 7 touchdowns and no picks to start the season.
And for me, Mike, the pressure's on Beck. Okay? It's Tuesday. I'll tell you this Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Pressure's on Beck. The reason why, it's not that Georgia is the number 2 team and they're 4. Everybody thinks Jalen Milroe's better.
Hmm.
They just do. And right now, based on how these two teams have played up until this point and with the opponents in front of them, ask people how they feel about Jalen Milroe. Ask how they feel about Carson Beck. I'm not telling you Beck's not really good. He just didn't show it in the last game. He may come out and ball out, which would be great for the Dogs. But, Mike, I think the pressure's on him to show people, hey, wait a minute. I had a bad game. We as a team had a bad game. I'm going to come out here against Alabama and show you guys.
How much sandbagging has gone on with both these teams?
Interesting.
Now, certainly the USF game where Jalen Milroe, look, the entire Alabama team, we talked about the physicality of USF, and then the depth wore them down. They just exploded in the fourth quarter. And in that game, Milroe throws for 2 touchdowns. By the way, their completion percentage is basically identical. 67.3 for Milroe, 68.3 for Carson Beck. But in the Wisconsin game, you know, Alabama, they were a bit of a slow start, and they cranked it up again. This is one where, I mean, the cliches are always whoever turns it over is going to lose. What about Georgia? Who's going to be like that fire breather on Georgia defense, right? And we've talked so much about, you know, everything and the offense and the running game, but can you get to Milroe the way you couldn't in the SEC championship last year?
Well, that's the question. And how much are you coming after him? Because I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't think that they are preparing for that, because that's all they've heard this offseason is we didn't get after him enough. Okay, so you can plan for lots of blitzes, Mike, and packages that they're going to come after him. How does Kalen DeBoer offensively adapt to that? Is that quick hitters, Mike? Screens? What are you doing to offset that if you know that's probably going to be part of the game plan? I think the Dogs, just from a health standpoint, we know Tate Ratledge is not going to be back, but Mykael Williams, some of these guys that have been out, they need, hopefully, to be able to come back and help them. And that's been also the other problem. Kirby's not going to make excuses, but they've been out some of their key guys.
Correct.
They were in Kentucky. And they didn't make excuses. They just showed up. They didn't play great, but they found a way to get it done. If they beat Alabama on Saturday night in Tuscaloosa, and even if it's an ugly win, because that's what happened in Kentucky, Mike, I'll take it. I don't care how you get it done, but you just have to know as the season progresses and you have to play this these more talented teams, Texas is better, I think, Mike, than anybody gives them credit for. And to go into Michigan and do what they did, and then Michigan to beat USC the way they did, it's almost like, okay, they're on another level. I don't know if you beat the Ohio States or the Texases the way you are playing right now, even if you get an ugly win against Alabama. But I think, to answer your question about the sandbagging, I believe that they'll be prepared for it, but I also think, Kirby, you got to say, I don't care. We got to get after this guy.
I mean, it was, you were up there for that game against Kentucky, and it was just, there was just a lot of missed opportunities. So I don't know if there was just, call it sandbagging, but certainly Alabama, man, it's going to be like, it's Saturday night at Bryant Denny. It's going to be off the chain.
Brian Snicker, this is it. What is he saying what is he saying about these three games with the Mets? Look, Snit's been at it. He's a world champion manager. He's one of, if not the best in the business. He's just not had the guys to get it done this year. But we got to find a way to find our way into the playoffs. You'll hear from Snit what he had to say on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Are the Braves going to find a way to get it done? That's really the question as we have six games to play.
This weather thing's become the big storyline here, too.
Well, it is. Matter of fact, state of emergency declared as Georgia braces for Tropical Storm Helene. That's normal protocols. I'm not trying to scare anybody. Anybody that may be concerned with, we're going to get some rain. We know that. I don't know. You know, I'm not a meteorologist. I can't tell you all the things that are going to happen, but we're in this path. And to your point, Mike, when do we get a chance to finish this series if, in fact, we're not able to finish it?
We'll talk to Grant McCauley at 5:40. One thing for certain, guys, they don't do the Giants win the pennant or Bucky effing Dent anymore. You don't get that one game shot. Back in the old days, it was 2 out of 3 for the Giants and Dodgers, for the record. There was no NLCS back then. But you just don't have time, Carl, because everything's so condensed.
It's true.
To get rolling with your wild card, everybody, the 3 seed, if we make the 3 seed, we take on Milwaukee. So it's just frustrating because, you got to play it. They can't let this slide with the Mets and the Braves head-to-head. Everybody who's in play, with the exception of the Mets, because we talked about the Brewers earlier, everybody's got to play everybody out. Padres get to play the Diamondbacks. That'll kind of settle their situation, one could argue. So Braves might get some help from some other guys, I suppose. But first things first, Carl, you got to be able to first play these games, and you got to win these games.
Schwellenbach tonight, Chris Sale, and then Max Fried. Really? Austin Riley's season is over. We're just getting this in.
Yeah.
CT scan showed there wasn't enough healing for him to return this season.
Always seemed like it was long odds at best, Carl. I mean, Ozzy is back. Ozzy, we just talked about it. He had one home run in the last game against the Marlins, but he did not get off to a great start since coming back. But Austin Riley, according to Snicker, Grant McCauley just tweeting, is over for this year.
All right.
I mean, it's one of those years, guys. I don't know what expectations you have, if you feel we could put some kind of Diamondbacks run together, but it's been long odds all season.
Yeah. Well, let's hear from Snit, because here's the guy that's making the decisions. And listen, I love him. I think he does a terrific job. You still need Jimmys and Joes. I don't care how great you are putting them in a game or a situation. And we just, we struggle with that. Our thing is scoring runs. I hope we find a way to get it done. The Mets are coming off of 3 or 4 wins against the Phillies. Steakhouse had our manager, Brian Snicker, on, and the first thing they said is, look, this sets up perfectly this week for us with the winner take all.
No, that's true. Hey, good to be with you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, no, always a pleasure. No, it is. It's, you know what, when you're playing these games like this, it's that's what this is all about. It's fun. It's, like I say, I've got up, I'm going to have a cup of coffee, talk to you guys, and go to the ballpark. And it's kind of like you do that tomorrow. So I'm proud of the guys, where we are at this point in the season, everything we've been through, everything we've had to navigate. I'm going to tell you what, like 2 months ago, if you told me I'd be sitting here talking to you guys with a chance to secure a wild card, I said I'm in.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the expression I hear in every sport when it comes to injuries is no one cares, next man up. But I got to tell you, there's next man up and there's what you've had to go through over the last 5-6 months. You ever had a season that played out quite like this ever before?
No, I haven't. I mean, none of them are easy. I mean, we won 100 games the last 2 years, and it wasn't easy. But this is kind of taking it to the next level. And you know what? Well, I think organizationally, we've done a great job of staying in the thick of things here. And, you know, like I said earlier, I'm proud of these guys. I think we went out, we got, I told Whit Merrifield one day, I said, we're running out of you retreads to even play anymore. You know, so,
yeah.
You know,
he's on one foot.
But those guys, yeah, those guys have done great. I mean, shoot, they've all stepped in. Our guys, you know, all of a sudden, we got some guys, you know, having some really good years here when they were struggling all year. You know, I look up Matt Olson on the cusp of 30 and 100, you know, and everything he's been through. Just, you know, I'm leaving here today and feeling pretty good about what we got going on.
When you're playing the Mets, who have been on fire for a lot of the summer, but certainly of late, the process, take a listener through the process of scouting them. I know it's a big series, but the process of how you go about how you're going to pitch, particularly this lineup, and knowing what to do about their starters, is it hyped up at all given what's at stake, or is it following exactly according to plan? And how much of the Mets have you talked about and watched in the last 24 hours?
No, you know, we know these guys really well. We've been playing against this group for a long time, even though some of their pieces have been with other teams. You know what? And you do what you do on a daily basis. I mean, this isn't fourth and one. We got to get a first down. You know what I mean? It's, it's still, we got to play a baseball game. We got to do the things that we're good at. Our guys do a great job analytically. Our coaches are preparing the guys, putting together the game plan. And we're not going to, you know what? These are big games. They're all big games ever since the end of March, first April, whenever the hell we started.
Yeah.
You know what? You just got to do what you can do. I mean, we're going to play our game. Our guys, you know, they have a good plan every night. We just got to go out and execute. And if we can do that, we're going to do okay.
Brian Snitker with us on Sports Radio 92.9. Austin Riley update. How are you feeling about him? I like what you said the other day. Having Ozzie in the lineup stretches you guys out, right? I feel the same way. All of a sudden, that lineup looks longer and longer. It'd look a lot longer if Austin Riley was there as well. What's the status?
Yeah, well, that's something I got to get to the ballpark today and talk to the trainers because I think they were going to have him looked at yesterday, so I'll know more when I get in there this afternoon. But it does look good. I tell you what, you know, Soler was starting to swing the bat, and, you know, all of a sudden he's coming up with some guys in scoring position, and which I really like. And so I think it's good protection for Matt. I think Ozzie's really good protection for Michael. So it's just, you know what, you can't go wrong when you got Ozzie in your lineup. I mean, he just adds so much, the person, who he is, the speed, things like that. So, you know, I think the more he plays every day, he's going to get better and get timed up a little bit better.
Beauty of baseball, a couple of guys have a good week. Doesn't matter what has gone on the last few months. Doesn't matter what went on 2 weeks ago. If a couple of guys in Soler, I think of him as one, I think of Ozzie, they have one of those weeks at home that we've seen them have, it's going to be a hell of a lot better and easier to try to win 5 out of 6.
No, absolutely. It's when those guys get going, man, they're guys that can put you on their back. You know, I love where Matt is. I love where Michael is. Ozuna's, you know, he's getting his hits again, you know, so, and Laureano's been unbelievable. I mean, I got so much respect for this kid, how he, you know, he got let go because of performance in Cleveland. He went to AAA and pretty much played his way back to the big leagues, and he has done an unbelievable job, and he got hot, and you're right, it's kind of this time of year, we're going to play the hot hand, and personal, it's just about winning games, you know, so, and he's one of those guys that he's made me put his name in the lineup every day.
No doubt. I don't think he'd ever imagine he'd be playing this much in this kind of a pennant race. And listen, we saw it in the NLCS. We saw it in the World Series. It's not always the name you think of that gets hot. And I just have a good feeling like you do, especially with Spencer, Chris Sale, and Max Fried the next 3 days.
Yeah, I like my chances with those three guys. So,
no doubt.
You know, I think we got the deck stacked good. You know what? We just got to go out and play baseball.
That is exactly right, Snit. That's Brian Snitker on the Steakhouse. Obviously, they spoke with him this morning on the steakhouse before we just got the news about Austin Riley. Listen, I was keeping my hands or my fingers crossed about getting him back because I kept saying if we get to the dance, which is the playoffs, we need Ozzie, we need Riley. And we got Ozzie, but we're not going to have Riley.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Steak and Sandra talking before that news became official just minutes ago that Austin Riley is shut down. They couldn't get the news they were looking for on the healing process. Real quick, with the storm coming, you just mentioned, the season ends for everybody on September 29th. Which is Sunday.
Yep.
And then the season begins postseason on Tuesday the 1st. So, I mean, conceivably, if it came down to mattering, the Mets doing a double dip with the Braves here at the end of the season on September 30th.
Yeah. On Monday.
We'll talk to Grant about it if that is in the – because as we said earlier, there's just no tiebreaker now for this. They don't play that tiebreaker.
404-726-0929. And again, my concern heading into this – a series is what it's been all season. Inconsistency. We've had 2 6-game losing streaks in the second half, but we've only had basically a 3-game sweep, and we haven't done that in a series since the middle of June. So what gives? Are we going to show up and find a way? I hope we do. Schwellenbach on the hill tonight. We are 1.5 games out, by the way, with the loss last night. All right. And by the way, Mike, we do own the tiebreaker with the Giants. We do on the tiebreaker.
I like
the
that.
Okay. Hey, man, what do we got coming up in Guy Talk?
Hey, man, you know, your dad's a coach of an NFL team. Really don't need people dropping where you live after he does some really boneheaded stuff with the decisions that cost you a trip to the Super Bowl. We'll get into that coming up. And more Metallica tickets, I presume, Orin?
Yeah. What caller, Mike? What caller?
Let's make Orin work. The Ocho, caller 8.
404-726-0929.
We always get the guys like, damn it, I was 7. I ain't never 7. I was 6 or I was 8. Well, it's 8 tonight. How about that? 8.
Metallica's M72 World Tour. It is June 3rd, 2025 at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Tickets on sale now. You can get 2 just for listening to Dukes and Bell. Good luck.
Where to play is play. The weather's a big story today, man. I was reading some of those reports out there. And, of course, nobody is more in tune with any impending weather than our own John Fricke here at 92.9 The Game.
Is he putting his reports out there?
I don't care.
He lives for traffic, and he lives for weather. Going back to his time with you, of course, on the morning show, he put a video out there, an image that I retweeted, where there's a map of what potentially the storm could look like when it makes landfall, and it comes like basically right for Atlanta, it looks like. And then it's going to be maybe a 3. I don't want to freak people out, but you know, hopefully the wind and some of the weather dissipates by the time it gets here. But either way. I canceled the tree company from coming to the house.
Very nice.
They were going to take some trees down.
Don't remind me of tree companies right now.
Mother Nature might do that for me. I hope that's not the case either. Knock wood. But, yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, yeah. But anyway, yeah. Orin, you work in the morning show. He just lives for this stuff? He's obsessed with weather.
He's a newsie, man. Like, anything news-related where he gets a chance to kind of report the news, be the kind of the old-school John Fricke newscaster, he lives for that role.
Okay, so he wakes up and, what can I report?
Okay.
Yeah, that's what he does.
He really steps into, like, sort of like, you know, Ted Baxter mode. Remember Ted Knight? Mary? Lou? The storm's going to be a doozy.
And meeting all the Chiquitas.
New models showing Helene potentially still near hurricane status ashore into Metro Atlanta, forecasting possible 8 inches of rain. I'm just sharing what the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric people are reporting.
Okay.
I'm not trying to be alarmist. But there's a map and there's a giant hurricane that's right over Georgia. Not that John was trying to freak anybody. Too late.
Too late.
Too late.
Yeah. 8 inches. Right. And by the way, we don't know what this is going to – I want you to listen to your local meteorologist. We don't know for sure. Mike and I are not meteorologists, but we're having fun with this. But, yes, we're going to get some rain. I mean, that's the reality of it. How much? I don't know.
So be careful out there. John lives up near Cartersville. Apparently, there's like 3 or 4 people in Cartersville who want to put a contract out on me today, Carl.
Really?
Yeah, we were talking earlier about Trevor Lawrence and how bad the Jaguars looked last night. There were some awful throws. He threw a terrible pick. He rolled out of some phantom pressure that people turned into a meme today.
Yes, he did.
And then, you know, I said, well, maybe he needs better wide receivers. And then one of our loyal listeners, Mr. Yo, who always gives us good data. We have like our 3 or 4 guys. Brandon's one guy. Mr. Yo is another guy. And they always get like associate producer credits. They always give us pretty good data. Well, he immediately, as we were talking about Trevor Lawrence, shoots us the meme that says, well, completion percentage, Daniel Jones is actually better. Passing yards per season more go to Lawrence. But as far as all the averages that matter, touchdowns, interceptions, percentage of QBR, Daniel Jones, and it's like that meme of Spider-Man where Spider-Man's pointing at Spider-Man, that basically Daniel Jones is no better than Trevor Lawrence, and Trevor Lawrence is no better than Daniel Jones, which means that Trevor Lawrence is mediocre by any metric.
Well, if he's Daniel Jones, he's a bust. And I don't know if we're there yet, but Mike, they just invested a lot of money. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, they just invested a lot of money in Trevor Lawrence.
Are they going to have the buyer's remorse the Giants had over Daniel Jones?
Well, this is the thing. If you're telling me that that's what he is statistically right now, and the numbers don't lie, that's got to be troubling. And by the way, you guys know who the backup quarterback is, right?
It's Mac Jones.
Are you telling me you're benching Trevor Lawrence from Mac Jones? No way.
Well, it gets to the point when a guy's job is on the line, and Coach Peterson is now fighting. I said to Carl earlier, so maybe you should call Frank Reich. He needs somebody. You know, Frank, you doing anything? You want to fix Sunshine? Because he's not working right now.
You know
now.
What Frank's doing? Collecting those checks from Dave Tepper. Right.
Speaking of head coaches in the NFL, here's a crazy story, and this is where sometimes things on social media take a turn. It gets scary. Dan Campbell, we later found out, was forced to move his family's house. Got to get a whole new house after they blew the NFC Championship game against the 49ers because somebody in his daughter's high school class listed their home address on social media.
Brutal.
And then a few hours after the loss, 34-31 to the Niners, somebody put on Twitter, dumb blank trying to go for it about Dan Campbell, and then corresponding tweets with the address. And then all of a sudden people started doing drive-bys at their house in suburban Detroit in Bloomfield Hills. They ended up getting the Lions security involved because his wife was on the West Coast. The daughters freaked out. And eventually, long story short, they ended up moving to another house.
Yeah. He mentioned the fact that and by the way, it should never come to this.
Nope.
Like, we make jokes about, you know, get the moving company and all of that kind of stuff. We've had our moments here in our city. But it should never come to that, like where people are rolling up to the crib, Mike, and complaining about the game, the calls, or what you did and didn't do. Now, did Campbell blow the game for him? Yeah, I thought he did. But, like, that's the extent of it, Mike. I'm not rolling to his house to threaten his family. So that's unfortunate. But I know he said, by the way, I think he made a little money on that deal.
Yes, it was a nice-looking $4.5 million, seven-bathroom, five-bedroom home. Nice. Lyle Dungy, who's part of the NFL security team, apparently called the Bloomfield police that night and said, look, daughter's freaked out. Yeah. Can you help out? They sent a squad car over there. The individual who posted is 1 year behind Campbell's daughter as what the Detroit Free Press describes as an exclusive private school. Then put the address out there. Then later deleted it once they called their parents and said, you got some explaining to do. The parents profusely apologized, but Dan Campbell thought it would be a better idea to get to another locale.
Yeah, I'm with him on that. And keep my address out of your mouth, will you? Right.
By the way, Dan Campbell, very effective in the Applebee's commercial with the menu over the mouth.
Love it. I love it.
They'll never see it coming.
I the first time I saw it, it was on mute, and I was like, what is he doing? And then I heard it. I love the commercial.
There's a bunch of guys doing the NFL and former NFL players and coaches doing it. I thought it was very, very clever. Hey, Aaron Rodgers, always a team player, never, ever trying to create any controversy or anything. Well, Rodgers, you could argue, goes on the Pat McAfee show and takes a swipe at Hassan Reddick's agent.
Uh-oh.
Hassan Reddick's agent said there was dysfunction in the Jets' locker room and front office. Just reading that headline there, sounds like it was written by Hassan Reddick's agent, Rodgers says. Former agent, I guess, possibly, in a way to disparage our great organization. So standing up for the Jets. Mm. But a lot of players would say, you don't talk about another player's money while he's going toe-to-toe with the team.
You don't mess up, A-Rod! Yeah, man. Keep my name out your mouth!
Right. No, he is defending the Jets, saying he thinks it's nonsense, and it's the opposite of what whoever was putting it out there about the culture of the Jets in an article in The Athletic.
Do you think he was lying about it?
Agent claims Rodgers has too much power on the team.
I don't think he's lying about it.
And the Jets have, quote, been unable to convert him into a team player.
I don't think he's lying, Mike.
I mean, Aaron does march to the beat of his own drum, and he does like to do as he say and don't say as he do.
Mike, when you reject your head coach's hug after throwing a touchdown, what more do we need to see?
Two-possession game, man. I don't like physical contact, man. Okay. You're my space.
All right, my bad.
It was strange. It really was strange. That whole dynamic was weird. Hey, man, saw a video today. Matt Damon was at a movie premiere, and somebody stuck a mic in his face and said, hey, what's your favorite four movies? And he took the time to actually think about it on the red carpet. And let me run this by you, because this is kind of like our wheelhouse for guy talk. Matt Damon said, you know, he said, well, you got to put Godfather in there. And he goes, you know what? He goes, I'll cheat. I'll make Godfather and Godfather 2 one movie.
Okay,
cool. You can do that. They've done that technically on HBO and stuff.
Just don't add the third one.
Don't know. If you don't use your daughter, Coppola, as, you know, the if again, for those who don't know, Winona Ryder was supposed to play Michael Corleone's daughter. She got, quote, burnout from making a movie with Cher called Mermaids, and then she had to tap out literally in the 11th hour, and the studio goes, we need somebody. And they had other ideas. And then they were going to move Bridget Fonda from her supporting role to being the daughter, and Coppola goes, no, my daughter Sophia can do it. Has she ever acted? No, but she'll be a natural.
Yeah.
Not great.
Not so fast.
I mean, I don't know about you, Carl, but when that movie, to Oren's point, Godfather 3, the most pivotal scene, his daughter is shot on the steps of the opera in Sicily. It's supposed to be a poignant moment. And people in New York, where I saw that movie, went into applause as Sophia Coppola's character is passing away.
Well, you thought she ruined it.
Well, she sounded like a Valley Girl.
Didn't fit the role.
Hey, cuz. It was strange. But anyway, getting back to Matt Damon. Matt Damon says Godfather 1 and 2 would be one movie in this world. He said the second one would be Pulp Fiction. Talked about he and Ben Affleck were young actor writers aspiring in Hollywood.
Loved it.
Went to the premiere of Pulp Fiction. Said it's one of those amazing experiences because I think, like most people, if you saw it initial run in 94, it was like going to a sporting event. People were just losing their minds. It was so wild. The reaction in the theater.
Yeah, it was. And Samuel L. Jackson, who was at the game, by the way, on Sunday night, talks about people stopping him to this day, Mike, and still wanting him to recite. And he does. He still knows. He knows the line, but wanting him to recite
that, that role pretty much like put him back in the forefront. Kind of. We kind of resurrected his entire career.
And John Travolta.
Yeah, that too.
It was Travolta. He thanks it all. He does thank Tarantino any chance he gets.
Remember this. Samuel L. Jackson, before Pulp Fiction, was in a TV show called Ghost Rider on PBS.
Wow. I mean, Sam has been in a million things. Like Michael Caine says, you don't turn down a paycheck, and he doesn't.
Nope.
And we love Sam. So he got Godfather at 1 and 2, and you got Pulp Fiction. I love this third one, a very underrated movie. I think for younger guys, I hope the joke still translates. It is what it is. It's Midnight Run. He likes a De Niro movie, which I still...
It's really good.
Charles Grodin, for those who've never seen it. It's a good movie. The mob's involved, and a guy's a bounty hunter. He's an ex-cop, and he's got to get Grodin from New York to L.A., and then the hijinks ensue, and it's a fantastic movie.
It is. That's interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that he would pick that movie.
And then he says, of course, he's got to pay homage to a guy he's worked with, Steven Spielberg. You put Jaws in there as number 4.
Okay. Jaws changed the game, didn't it?
Right. And so I got to be honest. I was like, you know, we always, it's one of those where you can, it's hard for guys. Top four. It's a hard, bro, that's a hard top four to beat.
Yeah.
I mean, again, there's no wrong answers. It's what you like. I mean, I always put Goodfellas in Heat in my top four because I'm a Michael Mann. Heat was on the other night.
For sure.
But
The Jaws thing, and the reason why I say that is because I saw this Spielberg special or whatever where he was talking about not being able to see the shark made it even scarier.
Right. The whole script, there was more shark, but the shark didn't work, and it built the drama up and the tension.
And now you think about scary movies. It's not seeing the bad guy. It's the lead-up, right? I mean, even think about Halloween. All these movies that we've seen, you hear that music, and you're like, this is somewhere around.
Right.
And you feel like something's about to happen, but you're not sure. Jaws was incredible, man.
You know, Robert Shaw, when he does the whole soliloquy about the USS Indianapolis, apparently he tried to do it hammered, couldn't pull it off, and he told Spielberg, I will do it again tomorrow. They came back. He was sober, and he did it, and he nailed it.
Yeah.
So that's been I love this. Anytime there's anything on Jaws, I'm like, Carl, I'll jump all over that. Real quick, last nugget. Carl turned me on to something 2 weeks ago. It's the Netflix documentary, All the Real Original Film and News Film of Apollo 13.
Yeah.
It's, if you guys love stuff like we love, it's worth a watch on Netflix. It's only about 90 minutes. It's amazing.
It really is. And when we say original footage, like this is stuff they hadn't seen. This isn't the movie, all right? This isn't Tom Hanks.
This is the real mission control and news raw footage. It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And what I didn't know, Mike, is the timing of when they were like, Houston, we have a problem. It was late at night. And nobody was around. And literally, I say nobody. They had people there, but it was like they had to literally call everybody. Remember, this is not the age of cell phones. Right. You had to get people on the phone and be like, we got something going on down here. It's crazy, Mike.
And the timing really came down to minutes and seconds. You're right, man. Anyway, it's worth it. It's on Netflix. Go get it, guys. Hey, there's your guy talk brought to you by Dukes of Bell. Hey, man, Ale.
All right, guys. Coming up, Falcon Report. What does Ra and our quarterback say about the Saints? We control our own destiny. Also, we'll get into what this offense needs to do a little bit more of because we're not the only ones talking about it. We'll let you hear that. Grant McCauley is going to join us as the Braves start their biggest series of the year. A lot more to get to right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.